the laws of death.
Hades glowed with rage. I thought he would show his true form and vaporize his own children. But at the last moment, he seemed to regain control.
Take them, he told Alecto, choking back a sob. Wash their memories clean in the Lethe and bring them to the Lotus Hotel. Zeus will not harm them there.
As you wish, my lord, Alecto said. And the woman's body?
Take her as well, he said bitterly. Give her the ancient rites.
Alecto, the children, and Maria's body dissolved into shadows, leaving Hades alone in the ruins.
I warned you,
a new voice said. Hades turned. A girl in a multicolored dress stood by the smoldering remains of the sofa. She had short black hair and sad eyes. She was no more than 12. I didn't know her, but she looked strangely familiar.
You dare come here? Hades growled. I should blast you to dust.
You cannot, the girl said. The power of Delphi protects me.
With a chill, I realized I was looking at the Oracle of Delphi, back when she was alive and young. Somehow, seeing her like this was even spookier than seeing her as a mummy.
You've killed the woman I loved, Hades roared. Your prophecy brought us to this.
He loomed over the girl, but she didn't flinch.
Zeus ordained the explosion to destroy the children, she said, because you defied his will. I had nothing to do with it, and I did warn you to hide them sooner.
I couldn't. Maria would not let me. Besides, they were innocent.
Nevertheless, they are your children, which makes them dangerous. Even if you put them away in the Lotus Hotel, you only delay the problem. Nico and Bianca will never be able to rejoin the world lest they turn 16.
Because of your so-called great prophecy, and you have forced me into an oath to have no other children. You have left me with nothing.
I foresee the future, the girl said. I cannot change it.
Backfire lit the god's eyes, and I knew something bad was coming. I wanted to yell at the girl to hide or run.
Then, Oracle, hear the words of Hades, he growled. Perhaps I cannot bring back Maria, nor can I bring you an early death, but your soul is still mortal, and I can curse you.
The girl's eyes widened.
You would not.
I swear, Hades said, as long as my children remain outcasts, as long as I labor under the curse of your great prophecy, the Oracle of Delphi will never have another mortal host. You will never rest in peace. No other will take your place. Your body will wither and die, and still the Oracle's spirit will be locked inside you. You will speak your bitter prophecies until you crumble to nothing. The Oracle will die with you.
The girl screamed, and the misty image was blasted to shreds. Nico fell to his knees in Persephone's garden, his face white with shock. Standing in front of him was the real Hades, towering in his black robes and scowling down at his son.
And just what, he asked Nico, do you think you're doing?
A black explosion filled my dreams. Then the scene changed. Rachel Elizabeth Dare was walking along a white sand beach. She wore a swimsuit with a t-shirt wrapped around her waist. Her shoulders and face were sunburned. She knelt and began writing in the surf with her finger. I tried to make out the letters. I thought my dyslexia was acting up until I realized she was writing in ancient Greek. That was impossible. The dream had to be false. Rachel finished writing a few words and muttered,
"What in the world?"
I can read Greek, but I only recognized one word before the sea washed it away. My name. Perseus. Rachel stood abruptly and backed away from the surf. "Oh, gods," she said. "That's what it means." She turned and ran, kicking up sand as she raced back to her family's villa. She pounded up the porch steps, breathing hard. Her father looked up from his Wall Street Journal.
"Dad?"
Rachel marched up to him.
"We have to go back."
Her dad's mouth twitched, like he was trying to remember how to smile.
"Back? We just got here."
"There's trouble in New York. Percy's in danger."
"Did he call you?"
"No, not exactly, but I know. It's a feeling."
Mr. Dare folded his newspaper.
"Your mother and I have been looking forward to this vacation for a long time."
"No, you haven't. You both hate the beach. You're just too stubborn to admit it."
"Now, Rachel..."
"I'm telling you, something is wrong in New York. The whole city, I don't know what exactly, but it's under attack."
Her father sighed.
"I think we would have heard something like that on the news."
"No," Rachel insisted. "Not this kind of attack. Have you had any calls since we got here?"
Her father frowned.
"No, but it is the weekend, in the middle of the summer."
"You always get calls," Rachel said. "You've got to admit that's strange."
Her father hesitated.
"We can't just leave. We've spent a lot of money."
"Look," Rachel said. "Daddy, Percy needs me. I have to deliver a message. It's life or death."
"What message? What are you talking about?"
"I can't tell you."
"Then you can't go."
Rachel closed her eyes, like she was getting up her courage.
"Dad, let me go, and I'll make a deal with you."
Mr. Dare sat forward. Deals were something he understood.
"I'm listening."
"Clarion Ladies Academy. I'll go there in the fall. I won't even complain. But you have to get me back to New York right now."
He was silent for a long time. Then he opened his phone and made a call.
"Douglas, prep the plane. We're leaving for New York."
"Yes, immediately."
Rachel flung her arms around him, and her father seemed surprised, like she'd never hugged him before.
"I'll make it up to you, Dad."
He smiled, but his expression was chilly. He studied her like he wasn't seeing his daughter, just the young lady he wanted her to be, once Clarion Academy got through with her.
"Yes, Rachel," he agreed. "You most certainly will."
The scene faded. I mumbled in my sleep, "Rachel, no." I was still tossing and turning when Thalia shook me awake.
"Percy," she said, "come on, it's late afternoon. We've got visitors."
I sat up, disoriented. The bed was too comfortable, and I hated sleeping in the middle of the day.
"Visitors?" I said.
Thalia nodded grimly.
"A Titan wants to see you. Under a flag of truce, he has a message from Kronos."
Chapter 13. A Titan brings me a present. We could see the white flag from half a mile away. It was as big as a soccer field, carried by a 30-foot-tall giant with bright blue skin and icy gray hair.
"A Hyperborean," Thalia said. "The giants of the north. It's a bad sign that they sided with Kronos. They're usually peaceful."
"You've met them?" I said.
"Mm-hmm. There's a big colony in Alberta. You do not want to get into a snowball fight with those guys."
As the giant got closer, I could see three human-sized envoys with him. A half-blood in armor, an Impusa demon with a black dress and flaming hair, and a tall man in a tuxedo. The Impusa held the tux dude's arm, so they looked like a couple on their way to a Broadway show or something, except for her flaming hair and fangs. The group walked leisurely toward the Heckscher playground. The swings and ball courts were empty. The only sound was the fountain on Umpire Rock. I looked at Grover. "The tux dude is the Titan?" He nodded nervously.
"He looks like a magician. I hate magicians. They usually have rabbits."
I stared at him. "You're scared of bunnies?"
"Bah! They're big bullies," Always stealing celery from defenseless satyrs?
Thalia coughed.
What?
Grover demanded.
We'll have to work on your bunny phobia later, I said.
Here they come. The man in the tux stepped forward. He was taller than an average human, about 7 feet. His black hair was tied in a ponytail. Dark round glasses covered his eyes, but what really caught my attention was the skin on his face. It was covered in scratches, like he'd been attacked by a small animal, a really, really mad hamster, maybe.
Percy Jackson, he said in a silky voice. It's a great honor.
His lady friend, the Impusa, hissed at me. She'd probably heard how I destroyed two of her sisters last summer.
My dear, Tux Dude said to her, why don't you make yourself comfortable over there, huh?
She released his arm and drifted over to a park bench. I glanced at the armed demigod behind Tux Dude. I hadn't recognized him in his new helmet, but it was my old backstabbing buddy, Ethan Nakamura. His nose looked like a squashed tomato from our fight on the Williamsburg Bridge. That made me feel better.
Hey, Ethan, I said. You're looking good.
Ethan glared at me.
To business.
Tux Dude extended his hand.
I am Prometheus.
I was too surprised to shake.
The fire stealer guy? The chain to the rock with the vultures guy?
Prometheus winced. He touched the scratches on his face.
Please, don't mention the vultures. But yes, I stole fire from the gods and gave it to your ancestors. In return, the ever-merciful Zeus had me chained to a rock and tortured for all eternity. But how did I get free? Hercules did that, eons ago. So, you see, I have a soft spot for heroes. Some of you can be quite civilized.
Unlike the company you keep, I noticed. I was looking at Ethan, but Prometheus apparently thought I meant the Impusa.
Oh, demons aren't so bad, he said. You just have to keep them well fed. Now, Percy Jackson, let us parley.
He waved me toward a picnic table, and we sat down. Thalia and Grover stood behind me. The blue giant propped his white flag against a tree and began absently playing on the playground. He stepped on the monkey bars and crushed them, but he didn't seem angry. He just frowned and said,
"Uh-oh."
Then he stepped in the fountain and broke the concrete bowl in half.
"Uh-oh."
The water froze where his foot touched it. A bunch of stuffed animals hung from his belt. The huge kind you get for grand prizes at an arcade. He reminded me of Tyson, and the idea of fighting him made me sad. Prometheus sat forward and laced his fingers. He looked earnest, kindly, and wise.
Percy, your position is weak. You know you can't stop another assault.
We'll see. Prometheus looked pained, like he really cared what happened to me.
Percy, I'm the Titan of Forethought. I know what's going to happen.
Also the Titan of Crafty Counsel, Grover put in. Emphasis on crafty.
Prometheus shrugged.
True enough, Satyr. But I supported the gods in the last war. I told Kronos, you don't have the strength, you'll lose, and I was right. So you see, I know how to pick the winning side. This time, I'm backing Kronos.
Because Zeus chained you to a rock, I guessed.
Partly, yes, I won't deny I want revenge. But that's not the only reason I'm supporting Kronos. It's the wisest choice. I'm here because I thought you might listen to reason.
He drew a map on the table with his finger. Wherever he touched, golden lines appeared, glowing on the concrete.
This is Manhattan. We have armies here, 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 and here. We know your numbers. We outnumber you 20 to 1.
Your spy has been keeping you posted, I guessed. Prometheus smiled apologetically.
At any rate, our forces are growing daily. Tonight, Kronos will attack. You will be overwhelmed. You've fought bravely, but there's just no way you can hold all of Manhattan. You'll be forced to retreat to the Empire State Building. There you'll be destroyed. I have seen this. It will happen.
I thought about the picture Rachel had drawn in my dreams. An army at the base of the Empire State Building. I remembered the words of the young girl oracle in my dream. I foresee the future. I cannot change it. Prometheus spoke with such certainty it was hard not to believe him.
I won't let it happen, I said.
Prometheus brushed a speck off his tux lapel.
Understand, Percy. You are refighting the Trojan War here. Patterns repeat themselves in history. They reappear just as monsters do. A great siege. Two armies. The only difference is this time you are defending. You are Troy, and you know what happened to the Trojans, don't you?
So you're going to cram a wooden horse into the elevator at the Empire State Building? I asked.
Good luck.
Prometheus smiled.
Troy was completely destroyed, Percy. You don't want that to happen here. Stand down, and New York will be spared. Your forces will be granted amnesty. I will personally assure your safety. Let Kronos take Olympus. Who cares? Typhon will destroy the gods anyway.
Right, I said, and I'm supposed to believe Kronos would spare the city.
All he wants is Olympus, Prometheus promised. The might of the gods is tied to their seats of power. You saw what happened to Poseidon once his undersea palace was attacked.
I winced, remembering how old and decrepit my father looked.
Yes, Prometheus said sadly. I know that was hard for you. When Kronos destroys Olympus, the gods will fade. They will become so weak they will be easily defeated. Kronos would rather do this while Typhon has the Olympians distracted in the West. Much easier. Fewer lives lost, but make no mistake. The best you can do is slow us down. The day after tomorrow, Typhon arrives in New York, and you will have no chance at all. The gods and Mount Olympus will still be destroyed, but it will be much messier, much, much worse for you and your city. Either way, the Titans will rule.
Thalia pounded her fist on the table.
I serve Artemis. The hunters will fight to our last breath. Percy, you're not seriously going to listen to this slimeball, are you?
I figured Prometheus was going to blast her, but he just smiled.
Your courage does you credit, Thalia Grace.
Thalia stiffened.
That's my mother's surname. I don't use it.
As you wish, Prometheus said casually,
but I could tell he'd gotten under her skin. I'd never even heard Thalia's last name before. Somehow, it made her seem almost normal, less mysterious and powerful.
At any rate, the Titan said, you need not be my enemy. I have always been a helper of mankind.
That's a load of Minotaur dung, Thalia said. When mankind first sacrificed to the gods, you tricked them into giving you the best portion. You gave us fire to annoy the gods, not because you cared about us.
Prometheus shook his head.
You don't understand. I helped shape your nature.
A wiggling lump of clay appeared in his hands. He fashioned it into a little doll with legs and arms. The lump man didn't have any eyes, but it groped around the table, stumbling over Prometheus's fingers.
I have been whispering in man's ear since the beginning of your existence. I represent your curiosity, your sense of exploration, your inventiveness. Help me save you, Percy. Do this, and I will give mankind a new gift, a new revelation that will move you as far forward as fire did.
You can't make that kind of advance under the gods. They would never allow it, but this could be a new golden age for you, or...
He made a fist and smashed the clayman into a pancake. The blue giant rumbled.
Uh-oh.
Over at the park bench. The Impusa bared her fangs in a smile.
Percy, you know the Titans and their offspring are not all bad,
Prometheus said.
You've met Calypso.
My face felt hot. That's different.
How? Much like me, she did nothing wrong, and yet she was exiled forever simply because she was Atlas's daughter. We are not your enemies. Don't let the worst happen, he pleaded. We offer you peace.
I looked at Ethan Nakamura. You must hate this. I don't know what you'll mean. If we took this deal, you wouldn't get revenge. You wouldn't get to kill us all. Isn't that what you want? His good eye flared.
All I want is respect, Jackson. The gods never gave me that. You wanted me to go to your stupid camp. Spend my time crammed into the Hermes cabin because I'm not important? Not even recognized?
He sounded just like Luke when he tried to kill me in the woods at camp 4 years ago. The memory made my hand ache where the pit scorpion had stung me. Your mom's the goddess of revenge, I told Ethan. We should respect that?
Nemesis stands for balance. When people have too much good luck, she tears them down.
Which is why she took your eye?
It was payment, he growled. In exchange, she swore to me that one day I would tip the balance of power. I would bring the minor gods respect, and I was a small price to pay.
Great mom.
At least she keeps her word, unlike the Olympians. She always pays her debts, good or evil.
Yeah, I said. So I saved your life, and you repaid me by raising Kronos. That's fair. Ethan grabbed the hilt of his sword, but Prometheus stopped him.
Now, the Titan said. We are on a diplomatic mission.
Prometheus studied me as if trying to understand my anger. Then he nodded, like he just picked a thought from my brain.
It bothers you what happened to Luke, he decided. Hestia didn't show you the full story. Perhaps if you understood...
The Titan reached out. Thalia cried a warning, but before I could react, Prometheus's index finger touched my forehead. Suddenly, I was back in May Castellan's living room. Candles flickered on the fireplace mantel, reflected in the mirrors along the walls. Through the kitchen doorway, I could see Thalia sitting at the table while Mrs. Castellan bandaged her wounded leg. 7-year-old Annabeth sat next to her, playing with a Medusa beanbag toy. Hermes and Luke stood apart in the living room. The god's face looked liquid in the candlelight, like he couldn't decide what shape to adopt. He was dressed in a navy blue jogging outfit with winged Reeboks.
"Why show yourself now?"
Luke demanded. His shoulders were tense, as if he expected a fight.
All these years I've been calling to you, praying you'd show up, and nothing. You left me with her.
He pointed toward the kitchen like he couldn't bear to look at his mother, much less say her name.
Luke, do not dishonor her,
Hermes warned.
Your mother did the best she could. As for me, I could not interfere with your path. The children of the gods must find their own way. So it was for my own good, growing up on the streets, fending for myself, fighting monsters? You're my son, Hermes said. I knew you had the ability. When I was only a baby, I crawled from my cradle and set out for... I'm not a god. Just once, you could have said something. You could have helped when...
He took an unsteady breath, lowering his voice so no one in the kitchen could overhear.
When she was having one of her fits, shaking me and saying crazy things about my fate. When I used to hide in the closet so she wouldn't find me with those glowing eyes. Did you even care that I was scared? Did you even know when I finally ran away?
In the kitchen, Mrs. Castellan chattered aimlessly, pouring Kool-Aid for Thalia and Annabeth as she told them stories about Luke as a baby. Thalia rubbed her bandaged leg nervously. Annabeth glanced into the living room and held up a burned cookie for Luke to see. She mouthed,
"Can we go now?"
"Luke, I care very much," Hermes said slowly. "But gods must not interfere directly in mortal affairs. It is one of our ancient laws, especially when your destiny..."
His voice trailed off. He stared at the candles as if remembering something unpleasant.
"What?" Luke asked.
"What about my destiny?" "You should not have come back," Hermes muttered. "It only upsets you both. However, I see now that you are getting too old to be on the run without help. I'll speak with Chiron at Camp Half-Blood and ask him to send a satyr to collect you."
"We're doing fine without your help," Luke growled. "Now, what were you saying about my destiny?"
The wings on Hermes' Reeboks fluttered restlessly. He studied his son like he was trying to memorize his face, and suddenly, a cold feeling washed through me. I realized Hermes knew what May Castellan's mutterings meant. I wasn't sure how, but looking at his face, I was absolutely certain. Hermes understood what would happen to Luke someday, how he would turn evil.
"My son," he said, "I'm the god of travelers, the god of roads. If I know anything, I know that you must walk your own path, even though it tears my heart. You don't love me." "I promise I do love you. Go to camp. I will see that you get a quest soon. Perhaps you can defeat the Hydra, or steal the apples of Hesperides. You will get a chance to be a great hero before..."
"Before what?"
Luke's voice was trembling now.
"What did my mom see that made her like this? What's going to happen to me? If you love me, tell me."
Hermes' expression tightened.
"I cannot."
"Then you don't care,"
Luke yelled. In the kitchen, the talking died abruptly.
"Luke?" May Castellan called. "Is that you? Is my boy all right?"
Luke turned to hide his face, but I could see the tears in his eyes.
"I'm fine. I have a new family. I don't need either of you." "I'm your father,"
Hermes insisted.
"A father is supposed to be around. I've never even met you. Thalia, Annabeth, come on. We're leaving."
"My boy, don't go,"
May Castellan called after him.
"I have your lunch ready."
Luke stormed out the door, Thalia and Annabeth scrambling after him. May Castellan tried to follow, but Hermes held her back. As the screen door slammed, May collapsed in Hermes' arms and began to shake. Her eyes opened, glowing green, and she clutched desperately at Hermes' shoulders.
"My son," she hissed in a dry voice. "Danger, terrible fate."
"I know, my love," Hermes said softly. "Believe me, I know."
The image faded. Prometheus pulled his hand away from my forehead.
"Percy?" Thalia asked. "What? What was that?"
I realized I was clammy with sweat. Prometheus nodded sympathetically.
"Appalling, isn't it? The gods know what is to come, and yet they do nothing, even for their children. How long did it take for them to tell you your prophecy, Percy Jackson? Don't you think your father knows what will happen to you?
I was too stunned to answer.
Percy, Grover warned. He's playing with your mind, trying to make you angry.
Grover could read emotions, so he probably knew Prometheus was succeeding.
Do you really blame your friend Luke? The Titan asked me. And what about you, Percy? Will you be controlled by your fate? Kronos offers you a much better deal.
I clenched my fists. As much as I hated what Prometheus had shown me, I hated Kronos a lot more. I'll give you a deal. Tell Kronos to call off his attack, leave Luke Castellan's body, and return to the pits of Tartarus. Then, maybe I won't have to destroy him. The Empusa snarled. Her hair erupted in fresh flames, but Prometheus just sighed.
If you change your mind, he said, I have a gift for you.
A Greek vase appeared on the table. It was about 3 feet high and a foot wide, glazed with black and white geometric designs. The ceramic lid was fastened with a leather harness. Grover whimpered when he saw it. Thalia gasped.
That's not...
Yes, Prometheus said. You recognize it.
Looking at the jar, I felt a strange sense of fear, but I had no idea why.
This belonged to my sister-in-law, Prometheus explained. Pandora.
A lump formed in my throat.
As in Pandora's box?
Prometheus shook his head.
I don't know how this box business got started. It was never a box. It was a pithos, a storage jar. I suppose Pandora's pithos doesn't have the same ring to it. But never mind that. Yes, she did open this jar, which contained most of the demons that now haunt mankind. Fear, death, hunger, sickness.
Don't forget me.
The Empusa purred.
Indeed, Prometheus conceded. The first Empusa was also trapped in this jar, released by Pandora. But what I find curious about the story, Pandora always gets the blame. She is punished for being curious. The gods would have you believe that this is the lesson. Mankind should not explore. They should not ask questions. They should do what they are told. In truth, Percy, this jar was a trap designed by Zeus and the other gods. It was revenge on me and my entire family. My poor, simple brother, Epimetheus, and his wife, Pandora. The gods knew she would open the jar. They were willing to punish the entire race of humanity along with us.
I thought about my dream of Hades and Maria de Angelo. Zeus had destroyed an entire hotel to eliminate two demigod children, just to save his own skin, because he was scared of a prophecy. He'd killed an innocent woman and probably hadn't lost any sleep over it. Hades was no better. He wasn't powerful enough to take his revenge on Zeus, so he cursed the oracle, dooming a young girl to a horrible fate. And Hermes? Why had he abandoned Luke? Why hadn't he at least warned Luke, or tried to raise him better so he wouldn't turn evil? Maybe Prometheus was toying with my mind. But what if he's right? Part of me wondered. How are the gods any better than the Titans? Prometheus tapped the lid of Pandora's jar.
Only one spirit remained inside when Pandora opened it.
Hope, I said. Prometheus looked pleased.
Very good, Percy. Elpis, the spirit of hope, would not abandon humanity. Hope does not leave without being given permission. She can only be released by a child of man.
The Titan slid the jar across the table.
I give you this as a reminder of what the gods are like, he said. Keep Elpis if you wish, but if you decide that you have seen enough destruction,
enough futile suffering. Then open the jar. Let Elpis go. Give up hope, and I will know that you are surrendering. I promise Kronos will be lenient. He will spare the survivors.
I stared at the jar and got a very bad feeling. I figured Pandora had been completely ADHD like me. I can never leave things alone. I didn't like temptation. What if this was my choice? Maybe the prophecy all came down to my keeping this jar closed or opening it.
I don't want the thing, I growled.
Too late, Prometheus said. The gift is given. It cannot be taken back.
He stood. The Ampusa came forward and slipped her arm through his.
Moraine!
Prometheus called to the blue giant.
We are leaving. Get your flag.
Uh-oh,
the giant said.
We will see you soon, Percy Jackson.
Prometheus promised.
One way or another.
Ethan Nakamura gave me one last hateful look. Then the truce party turned and strolled up the lane through Central Park like it was just a regular sunny Sunday afternoon. Chapter 14. Pigs Fly. Back at the plaza, Thalia pulled me aside.
What did Prometheus show you?
Reluctantly, I told her about the vision of May Castellan's house. Thalia rubbed her thigh like she was remembering the old wound.
That was a bad night, she admitted. Annabeth was so little, I don't think she really understood what she saw. She just knew Luke was upset.
I looked out the hotel windows at Central Park. Small fires were still burning in the north, but otherwise, the city seemed unnaturally peaceful.
Do you know what happened to May Castellan? I mean...
I know what you mean, Thalia said. I never saw her have an, episode, but Luke told me about the glowing eyes, the strange things she would say, and he made me promise never to tell. What caused it? I have no idea. If Luke knew, he never told me.
Hermes knew, I said. Something caused May to see parts of Luke's future, and Hermes understood what would happen, how Luke would turn into Kronos.
Thalia frowned.
You can't be sure of that.
Remember, Prometheus was manipulating what you saw, Percy, showing you what happened in the worst possible light. Hermes did love Luke.
I could tell just by looking at his face, and Hermes was there that night because he was checking up on May, taking care of her. He wasn't all bad.
It's still not right, I insisted. Luke was just a little kid. Hermes never helped him, never stopped him from running away. Thalia shouldered her bow. Again, it struck me how much stronger she looked now that she'd stopped aging. You could almost see a silvery glow around her, the blessing of Artemis.
Percy, she said, you can't start feeling sorry for Luke. We all have tough things to deal with. All demigods do. Our parents are hardly ever around, but Luke made bad choices. Nobody forced him to do that. In fact,
she glanced down the hall to make sure we were alone.
I'm worried about Annabeth. If she has to face Luke in battle, I don't know if she can do it. She's always had a soft spot for him.
Blood rose to my face. She'll do fine.
I don't know. After that night, after we left his mom's house, Luke was never the same. He got reckless and moody, like he had something to prove. By the time Grover found us and tried to get us to camp, well, part of the reason we had so much trouble was because Luke wouldn't be careful. He wanted to pick a fight with every monster we crossed. Annabeth didn't see that as a problem. Luke was her hero. She only understood that his parents had made him sad. And she got very defensive of him. She still is defensive. All I'm saying, don't you fall into the same trap. Luke has given himself to Kronos now. We can't afford to be soft on him.
I looked out at the fires in Harlem, wondering how many sleeping mortals were in danger right now because of Luke's bad choices. "You're right," I said. Thalia patted my shoulder. "I'm gonna go check on the hunters, then get some more sleep before nightfall. You should crash too."
"The last thing I need is more dreams."
"I know. Believe me." Her dark expression made me wonder what she'd been dreaming about. It was a common demigod problem. The more dangerous our situation became, the worse and more frequent our dreams got. "But Percy, there's no telling when you'll get another chance for rest. It's going to be a long night. Maybe our last night." I didn't like it, but I knew she was right. I nodded wearily and gave her Pandora's jar. "Do me a favor. Lock this in the hotel vault, will you? I think I'm allergic to Pythus." Thalia smiled.
"You got it."
I found the nearest bed and passed out. But of course, sleep only brought more nightmares. I saw the undersea palace of my father. The enemy army was closer now, entrenched only a few hundred yards outside the palace. The fortress walls were completely destroyed. The temple my dad had used as his headquarters was burning with Greek fire. I zoomed in on the armory, where my brother and some other Cyclopes were on lunch break, eating from huge jars of Skippy extra chunky peanut butter. And don't ask me how it tasted underwater, because I don't want to know. As I watched, the outer wall of the armory exploded. A Cyclops warrior stumbled inside, collapsing on the lunch table. Tyson knelt down to help, but it was too late. The Cyclops dissolved into sea silt. Enemy giants moved toward the breach, and Tyson picked up the fallen warrior's club. He yelled something to his fellow blacksmiths, probably,
"For Poseidon!"
But with his mouth full of peanut butter, it sounded like,
"Poseidon!"
His brethren all grabbed hammers and chisels, yelled,
"Peanut butter!"
and charged behind Tyson into battle. Then the scene shifted. I was with Ethan Nakamura at the enemy camp. What I saw made me shiver, partly because the army was so huge, partly because I recognized the place. We were in the backwoods of New Jersey, on a crumbling road lined with run-down businesses and tattered billboard signs. A trampled fence ringed a big yard full of cement statuary. The sign above the warehouse was hard to read because it was in red cursive, but I knew what it said. Auntie M's Garden Gnome Emporium. I hadn't thought about the place in years. It was clearly abandoned. The statues were broken and spray-painted with graffiti. A cement satyr, Grover's Uncle Ferdinand, had lost his arm. Part of the warehouse roof had caved in. A big yellow sign pasted on the door read, "Condemned." Hundreds of tents and fires surrounded the property. Mostly I saw monsters, but there were some human mercenaries in combat fatigues and demigods in armor, too. A purple and black banner hung outside the Emporium, guarded by two huge blue Hyperboreans. Ethan was crouched at the nearest campfire. A couple of other demigods sat with him, sharpening their swords. The doors of the warehouse opened, and Prometheus stepped out.
"Nakamura," he called. "The master would like to speak to you."
Ethan stood up warily.
"Something wrong?"
Prometheus smiled.
"You'll have to ask him."
One of the other demigods snickered.
"Nice knowing you."
Ethan readjusted his sword belt and headed into the warehouse. Except for the hole in the roof, the place was just as I remembered. Statues of terrified people stood frozen in mid-scream. In the snack bar area, the picnic tables had been moved aside. Right between the soda dispenser and a pretzel warmer stood a golden throne. Kronos lounged on it, his scythe across his lap. He wore jeans and a t-shirt, and with his brooding expression, he looked almost human, like the younger version of Luke I'd seen in the vision, pleading with Hermes to tell him his fate. Then Luke saw Ethan, and his face contorted into a very inhuman smile. His golden eyes glowed.
"Well, Nakamura, what did you think of the diplomatic mission?"
Ethan hesitated. "I'm sure Lord Prometheus is better suited to speak."
"But I asked you."
Ethan's good eye darted back and forth, noting the guards that stood around Kronos.
I don't think Jackson will surrender, ever."
Kronos nodded.
"Anything else you wanted to tell me?"
No, sir."
"You look nervous, Ethan."
"No, sir. It's just, I heard this was the lair of..."
"Medusa. Yes, quite true. Lovely place, huh? Unfortunately, Medusa hasn't reformed since Jackson killed her, so you needn't worry about joining her collection. Besides, there are much more dangerous forces in this room."
Kronos looked over at a Lystragonian giant, who was munching noisily on some French fries. Kronos waved his hand, and the giant froze. A French fry hung suspended in midair, halfway between his hand and his mouth.
"Why turn them to stone?" Kronos asked. "When you can freeze time itself."
His golden eyes bored into Ethan's face.
"Now, tell me one more thing. What happened last night on the Williamsburg Bridge?"
Ethan trembled. Beads of perspiration were popping up on his forehead.
I don't know, sir."
"Yes, you do."
Kronos rose from his seat.
"When you attacked Jackson, something happened. Something was not quite right. The girl, Annabeth, jumped in your way."
"She wanted to save him."
"But he is invulnerable,"
Kronos said quietly.
"You saw that yourself."
"I can't explain it. Maybe she forgot."
"She forgot,"
Kronos said.
"Yes, that must have been it. Oh, dear, I forgot my friend is invulnerable and took a knife for him. Oops! Tell me, Ethan, where were you aiming when you stabbed at Jackson?"
Ethan frowned. He clasped his hand as if he were holding a blade and mimed the thrust.
"I'm not sure, sir. It all happened so fast. I wasn't aiming for any spot in particular."
Kronos' fingers tapped the blade of his scythe.
"I see,"
he said in a chilly tone.
"If your memory improves, I will expect..."
Suddenly, the Titan Lord winced. The giant in the corner unfroze, and the French fry fell into his mouth. Kronos stumbled backward and sank into his throne.
"My lord?"
Ethan started forward.
"I..."
The voice was weak, but just for a moment it was Luke's. Then Kronos' expression hardened. He raised his hand and flexed his fingers slowly as if forcing them to obey.
"It is nothing,"
he said, his voice steely and cold again.
"A minor discomfort."
Ethan moistened his lips.
"He's still fighting you, isn't he? Luke!"
"Nonsense,"
Kronos spat.
"Repeat that lie and I will cut out your tongue. The boy's soul has been crushed. I am simply adjusting to the limits of this form. It requires rest. It is annoying, but no more than a temporary inconvenience."
As you say, my lord."
"You!"
Kronos pointed his scythe at a Dracaena with green armor and a green crown.
"Queen Cess, is it?"
"Yes, my lord."
"Is our little surprise ready to be unleashed?"
The Dracaena queen bared her fangs.
"Oh, yes, my lord. Quite a lovely surprise."
"Excellent,"
Kronos said.
"Tell my brother Hyperion to move our main force south into Central Park. the half-bloods will be in such disarray they will not be able to defend themselves. Go now, Ethan. Work on improving your memory. We will talk again when we have taken Manhattan.
Ethan bowed, and my dream shifted one last time. I saw the big house at camp, but it was a different era. The house was painted red instead of blue. The campers down at the volleyball pit had early 90s hairstyles, which were probably good for keeping monsters away. Chiron stood by the porch, talking to Hermes and a woman holding a baby. Chiron's hair was shorter and darker. Hermes wore his usual jogging suit with his winged high tops. The woman was tall and pretty. She had blonde hair, shining eyes, and a friendly smile. The baby in her arms squirmed in his blue blanket like Camp Half-Blood was the last place he wanted to be.
"It's an honor to have you here," Chiron told the woman, though he sounded nervous. "It's been a long time since a mortal was allowed at camp." "Don't encourage her," Hermes grumbled. "May, you can't do this."
With a shock, I realized I was seeing May Castellan. She looked nothing like the old woman I'd met. She seemed full of life, the kind of person who could smile and make everyone around her feel good.
"Oh, don't worry so much," May said, rocking the baby. "You need an oracle, don't you? The old one's been dead for what, 20 years?
"Longer,"
Chiron said gravely. Hermes raised his arms in exasperation.
"I didn't tell you that story so you could apply. It's dangerous. Chiron, tell her." "It is," Chiron warned. "For many years, I have forbidden anyone from trying. We don't know exactly what's happened. Humanity seems to have lost the ability to host the Oracle."
"We've been through that," May said, "and I know I can do it. Hermes, this is my chance to do something good. I've been given the gift of sight for a reason."
I wanted to yell at May Castellan to stop. I knew what was about to happen. I finally understood how her life had been destroyed, but I couldn't move or speak.
Hermes looked more hurt than worried. "You couldn't marry if you became the Oracle," he complained. "You couldn't see me anymore."
May put her hand on his arm.
"I can't have you forever, can I? You'll move on soon. You're immortal."
He started to protest, but she put her hand on his chest.
"You know it's true. Don't try to spare my feelings. Besides, we have a wonderful child. I can still raise Luke if I'm the Oracle, right?"
Chiron coughed.
"Yes, but in all fairness, I don't know how that will affect the spirit of the Oracle. A woman who has already borne a child, as far as I know, this has never been done before. If the spirit does not take..."
"It will," May insisted.
"No," I wanted to shout. "It won't." May Castellan kissed her baby and handed the bundle to Hermes.
"I'll be right back."
She gave them one last confident smile and climbed the steps. Chiron and Hermes paced in silence. The baby squirmed. A green glow lit the windows of the house. The camper stopped playing volleyball and stared up at the attic.
A cold wind rushed through the strawberry fields.
Hermes must have felt it too. He cried,
"No! No!"
He shoved the baby into Chiron's arms and ran for the porch. Before he reached the door, the sunny afternoon was shattered by May Castellan's terrified scream. I sat up so fast, I banged my head on somebody's shield. "Oh!"
"Sorry, Percy."
Annabeth was standing over me.
"I was just about to wake you."
I rubbed my head, trying to clear the disturbing visions. Suddenly, a lot of things made sense to me. May Castellan had tried to become the Oracle. She hadn't known about Hades' curse preventing the spirit of Delphi from taking another host. Neither had Chiron or Hermes. They hadn't realized that by trying to take the job,
May would be driven mad, plagued with fits in which her eyes would glow green, and she would have shattered glimpses of her child's future.
"Percy?" Annabeth asked. "What's wrong?"
"Nothing," I lied.
What are you doing at Armor? You should be resting." "Oh, I'm fine," she said, though she still looked pale. She was barely moving her right arm. "That nectar and ambrosia fixed me up."
"Uh-huh. You can't seriously go out and fight."
She offered me her good hand and helped me up. My head was pounding. Outside, the sky was purple and red. "You're going to need every person you have," she said. "I just looked in my shield. There's an army."
"Heading south into Central Park," I said. "Yeah, I know." I told her part of my dreams. I left out the vision of May Castellan because it was too disturbing to talk about. I also left out Ethan's speculation about Luke fighting Kronos inside his body. I didn't want to get Annabeth's hopes up.
"Do you think Ethan suspects about your weak spot?" she asked.
"I don't know," I admitted. "He didn't tell Kronos anything, but if he figures it out, we can't let him."
"I'll bonk him on the head harder next time," I suggested. "Any idea what surprise Kronos was talking about?"
She shook her head.
"I didn't see anything in the shield, but I don't like surprises."
"Agreed."
"So," she said, "are you going to argue about me coming along?"
"Nah, you just beat me up."
She managed to laugh, which was good to hear. I grabbed my sword, and we went to rally the troops. Thalia and the head counselors were waiting for us at the reservoir. The lights of the city were blinking on at twilight. I guess a lot of them were on automatic timers. Street lamps glowed around the shore of the lake, making the water and trees look even spookier.
"They're coming,"
Thalia confirmed, pointing north with a silver arrow.
"One of my scouts just reported they've crossed the Harlem River. There was no way to hold them back. The army?"
She shrugged.
"It's huge."
"We'll hold them at the park," I said. "Grover, you ready?"
He nodded. "As ready as we'll ever be. If my nature spirits can stop them anywhere, this is the place."
"Yes, we will," said another voice.
A very old, fat satyr pushed through the crowd, stumbling over his own spear. He was dressed in wood-bark armor that only covered half of his belly.
"Linnaeus?" I said. "Don't act so surprised," he huffed. "I am a leader of the council, and you did tell me to find Grover. Well, I found him, and I'm not going to let a mere outcast lead the satyrs without my help."
Behind Linnaeus's back, Grover made gagging motions, but the old satyr grinned like he was the savior of the day.
"Never fear. We'll show those titans."
I didn't know whether to laugh or be angry, but I managed to keep a straight face.
Yeah. Well, Grover, you won't be alone. Annabeth and the Athena cabin will make their stand here, and me and
Thalia? She patted me on the shoulder.
"Say no more. The hunters are ready."
I looked at the other counselors. "That leaves the rest of you with a job just as important. You have to guard the other entrances to Manhattan. You know how tricky Kronos is. He'll hope to distract us with this big army and sneak another force in somewhere else. It's up to you to make sure that doesn't happen. Has each cabin chosen a bridge or tunnel?" The counselors nodded grimly.
"Then let's do it," I said. "Good hunting, everybody."
We heard the army before we saw it. The noise was like a cannon barrage combined with a football stadium crowd, like every Patriots fan in New England was charging us with bazookas. At the north end of the reservoir, the enemy vanguard broke through the woods, a warrior in golden armor leading a battalion of Lystragonian giants with huge bronze axes. Hundreds of other monsters poured out behind them.
"Positions!"
Annabeth yelled. Her cabin mates scrambled.
The idea was to make the enemy army break around the reservoir. To get to us, they'd have to follow the trails, which meant they'd be marching in narrow